Welcome to Weekly Insights at Winthrop Capital Management, where we discuss recent developments currently shaping the markets and industries in the global economy. Here's your host, Chief Investment Officer Greg Hahn.
Good morning. Happy Monday. I'm Greg Hahn, Chief Investment Officer for Winthrop Capital Management. With me is Adam Kunz, Head of Trading and Portfolio Management. Good morning.
Good morning.
All right. How many shopping days till the holidays? I don't even know.
Nine.
Yeah. So I did go out this weekend, Adam, and I'm not used to any type of crowds or traffic. So yeah, I went over to Castleton, and it was heavy. So that was encouraging. I still don't think it's enough to save the fourth
Macy's
quarter,
the
holiday shopping season, but it was encouraging. So so we've got a few things to cover this morning. I want to dig into equity valuation and then talk about what equity investing looks like next year. And then we can cover a little bit about what we've got from an economic outlook standpoint also. So right now, we call it the intersection. We are at an intersection between the continual spread of the virus around the globe and then the vaccine coming to market. So there's this cross. And we just hope it happens quickly. But it's interesting to watch because the way that the financial markets are discounting it, it's very opportunistic, very, very positive, optimistic view of what's going to happen for next year.
Right.
But when you look around the globe, Germany's going into lockdown. South Korea is looking at more rigorous rules around social interaction. As they're fighting, I think, their third wave now.
Yep.
But New York City just went into closed their in-service dining for restaurants. Chicago's a ghost town.
California, same.
Oh, my gosh. So there's some, I think we're going to see some unintended consequences come from this. In 2008, during the financial crisis, we saw companies start to reduce headcount and reduce their footprint in the commercial real estate market. Today, the work-at-home technology is so much more efficient than it was 10 years ago that companies have, I think, more confidence in their ability for workers to work at home and still be efficient. So Deutsche Bank announced that they're going to cut as many as 2,000 people out of the Manhattan headquarters. Now, this is in addition to back in 2018, they reduced headcount in Manhattan also.
Right.
We're seeing Goldman Sachs do it. Allianz Bernstein moved their research team to Nashville several years ago.
Yep.
So it's a push. It's going to be really interesting. New York's a world-class city. Don't get me wrong. This isn't the sky is falling kind of an issue. But it's interesting to see how big companies like this that use this New York as kind of a U.S. headquarters are starting to shift jobs. And I think we'll see more of that. Now, obviously, cities are going to benefit. I think Deutsche Bank has a huge operation in Jacksonville,
Florida.
So I think you're going to see you're going to see the beneficiaries of this are going to be the southern states like Texas and Florida, especially states that don't have income taxes. Go figure. Hey, before we shift, just a note, John le Carré died. Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy, and the Spy Who Came In from the Cold. Man, he is, if you've ever read any of his stuff, first, it's outstanding. And second, I don't think I've had a book where I've had to read the same sentence three times just to understand what's going on. For some reason, it trips me up. But man, he is something else. So I think we lost a legend there. All right, tell me what's on your plate, and then we're going to talk about Brexit also.
All right, so I mean, you kind of hit it last week. The vaccine coming to market was really the big news, and that's what's hitting today as well with Pfizer's drug making first deliveries or shipments, I guess is a better way to say it. But you did see the S&P was down last week slightly, about 1%. Energy was actually up on the week, and then conversely, you saw REITs down, and that was really driven by interest rates. But some of the big stories are really that rotation continues to happen And we've been talking about that. We put on an equal weight S&P position really back in September, and that has worked really well. So it's up 16.29% quarter to date versus the S&P up 9.38%. So you're really seeing that shift into, as we call them, the COVID affected industries pick up, people trying to front run what the vaccine is going to do in the economy. And then the real story is small caps. So the Russell 2000 just quarter to date is up 27%.
Yep.
So yeah, like I said, once again, you're seeing a rotation into sectors and market caps that were really lagging, and just investors seeing that as the opportunity going forward.
Yeah, and therein lies part of the trap too, because with that small cap index also is a large percentage of zombie companies.
Absolutely, yep.
So a zombie company is a company that can earn cash flow, but not enough cash flow to pay a dividend, pay down debt. It basically just makes enough to survive. So as an investment, it's a challenge. So I think, and that includes companies that have negative cash flow.
Yep.
So I think it was up to 20% or 25%.
25% was the number.
Of the Russell 2000 is companies that aren't producing cash flow.
Yeah, that's not changing.
No. So we have a rally in stocks in a quarter of the companies, don't we? Right.
Speaking of not making money.
Right.
Last week we had a couple IPOs, Airbnb and DoorDash, both of which almost doubled as they released. I think, what was it? Airbnb was up 78%. So,
all right. What does DoorDash do?
Well, they deliver food from restaurants. They're getting into grocery delivery as well, but overall, yeah, they deliver food.
Does it make money?
Not right now.
Okay. So, and it's one of those gig economy kind of jobs. So it's $60 billion was the market cap at the IPO.
Yep.
That puts it behind McDonald's.
Just behind it.
It's one of the most valuable restaurant service companies, and it doesn't make money.
Yeah. And the big problem I have with it is that it's not a scale business. Just because they sell more, get more subscriptions, doesn't mean they find a way to make more money. They've got to find some other way to monetize this.
Yeah. And I wonder too how much they benefit from the shift in labor because of what's going on with Uber and Lyft, and the ride sharing business is down, but it's been shifted over to grocery.
Yeah, at some point I feel like there's going to be a guy who's carrying a passenger, delivering food, and has some Amazon packages all in his car at the same time. That's maybe the only way this really works.
Well, let's talk about valuation while we're talking about this, because the S&P 500 right now is at historic, it's not at its all-time peak, but it's close to its all-time peak. And Freddie does some work, and Ben on our team does some work quarterly on valuation. So if we assume earnings right now, I'm assuming earnings at around 155, but in his model, he's got 163 on forward-looking earnings.
Yep.
And we've got, 3660 on the S&P 500. So we're trading at a PE right now of around over 23 times forward earnings. So we got to look at earnings growth. So he's got earnings growth, at like 3%, I think. So, I mean, it's not knocking the cover off the ball, but, we're looking at basically 5-year earnings out from where we are today, from an expectation of 163, maybe out to 200 in year 5. So it's not egregious in terms of what earnings growth is looking like, but that puts us at a 23 PE, which by historic, measures, we're usually around, 15?
Usually, 20 is usually high, is the considered high.
Right, and you look on a trailing 12-month basis. So if you shift, we're at 98. Now, I know that is just an absolute anomaly, but 98 bucks a share on the S&P 500 puts us right now, 35 on the PE? I mean, it's by historic measures of price earnings ratio. Now we can look at things like price to cash flow and revenue multiples and other cash flow multiple things. But I would emphasize that right now we've got an elevated valuation. I think that has two issues, two consequences to it, and those are as follows for next year. The first is that we expect low expected returns on the S&P next year because we kind of borrowed from the future. And that unless we see a more fiscal stimulus that drives the market, lower interest rates, and a lot of this valuation is driven by low interest rates. So how can rates really go lower? Or an unexpected rise in earnings? Any of those things would impact this model, would improve the earnings outlook. But it really is driven by a higher expectation for earnings. And the second part of that, Adam, is a shift in, we call it the rotation, but the shift from the leaders this year, which have been those technology stocks that you just talked about, mm-hmm. into the COVID-affected industries. And some of those COVID-affected industries are actually performing pretty well.
Yeah, they are.
So there are some opportunities, and we added Simon Property Group 2 weeks ago to the portfolio. I think at least in my family, I'll speak just for my family, people want to get out. I mean, so people want to go to the store. They want to shop. Mm-hmm. So this whole thing about online and retail's going away, I don't believe it for a minute.
No,
I just think people, once things open up, it's going to be a big party and people are going to go shopping again. So I think Simon will be a big beneficiary of that, especially with the buildup that they have actually in retail itself now. Mm-hmm. So,
The only other news on the equity side, Disney had their investor day, and the shares were up 14% as you saw subscribers grow by 14 million people. So another one of those stories where sitting at home is...
Yeah, but that's a great example of what we just talked about, because the theme park business is shut down. Mm-hmm. The cruise line business that Disney has is shut down. Mm-hmm. Yet the stock is trading at 52-week highs.
Yep.
And deservedly, I mean, I think the streaming business is a great add-on.
It is, yeah.
But it's not firing on all cylinders yet.
No, I mean, even sports viewing is still down. I mean, when you look at ESPN, they're holding their own, but by no means is there going to be any growth there right now.
Let's shift to the international side. So Brexit. This is it. We've been talking about Brexit all year. So Brexit, the dithering continues. And I liken it shamefully to my college days when... whether it was my parents, my teacher, or just the devil on my shoulder saying, "You've had all semester to finish this paper. Why are you waiting now? And we've had 3 years to get this deal nailed down. Why are you trying to do it in the last week?" Right?
Blow it away, right?
If the solution hasn't presented itself by now,
right.
It's not going to be a good deal. So I know that they're talking about fairness in competitive, business competition. They're talking about the fishing issues, but they've got a lot of sticking points. Very little time to do it. My sense is it's going to be if they're going to claim a win, it's going to be a crummy deal. I think we're going to see economic slowdown in the UK. Europe is suffering. You saw Germany with its lockdown. Germany will probably go into a recession this winter.
Yes.
It is not pretty over in Europe. But the bright spot's China. China has a vaccine. And you know where they're selling it? The Middle East. I'm telling you, the partnerships that they're developing, global partnerships. So the UAE approved it. I think it has an 86% of effectiveness rate. I mean, China wants to compete on the global stage, on the world stage with the Western countries, Europe and the United States, in manufacturing technology, pharmaceuticals. And this is one of those areas. So they're able to, I think it was Bahrain also approved it last week. So I think this is a big deal for China to have pharmaceuticals out there to especially... to help combat the global pandemic. So,
like you said, I mean, that's really their whole game with this Belt and Road is connect themselves to the Middle East. And this is just one more feather in that cap to solidify those relationships.
Anything going on in the bond world?
Well, last week was kind of that final push of new issuance. Saw a little over $20 billion in issuance. Really everything that issued was not that well received. Most things traded wider after the break. We saw two CLOs try to price. They were supposed to price on Monday, and because of lack of demand, they didn't price until Thursday and Friday. And I would really, you know, put that on the fact that spreads are so tight that investors just aren't jumping into the stuff going into year end. I think a lot of money managers are closing their books and saying, hey, you know, we've recovered. Mm-hmm. Let's just be happy coasting through the rest of the year. So that's kind of the sentiment we'll have for the rest of the year. This week is supposed to be less than $5 billion in new issuance. So
yeah,
just not going to be a lot of excess liquidity.
So, and speaking of that, next week is going to be our last podcast for the year. Till we go into the new year, and then we'll start it up again. So we'll go through the winners and the not so winners this year. I think preferred stocks actually did pretty well.
They did, yeah.
But we'll get better insight into the numbers heading into next week. What else? Anything else on your end?
Nothing here.
So thank you guys for listening, and have a great week. We'll talk to you through the week.
All investments are subject to risk, including the possible loss of the money you invest. The information presented in this podcast is intended for educational purposes only and does not take into consideration your personal circumstances or other factors that may be important in making investment decisions. You may access and download this podcast only for your personal and non-commercial use. You may not use it in any other manner or for any other purpose without Winthrop's written permission. Copyright 2020, Winthrop Capital Management, LLC. All rights reserved.